coming of age and trying to find your place in the world can be a complicated experience for people who grew up with a hyphen or two in their identities, like Iranian American Muslim female, for example. That experience can be especially unique.
Well, our next guest talks about just that in her work. Nagin Farsad is a comedian, actor, writer, and filmmaker based in New York City. In her new memoir, How to Make White People Laugh, she talks about growing up Iranian American in the post 9/11 world and using comedy to fight racism. Nagin, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you. And you describe your book as a social justice meets comedy manifesto. What does that mean exactly?
Well, I sort of do the kind of work that I do, I generally refer to as social justice comedy because it's not partisan, you know what I mean? It's about justice. It's inviting and warm. It makes you feel like you're sitting inside of a burrito. And it's funny, but it might, you know, have some kind of sneaky information embedded in it. You know, you could be hearing a sophisticated treatise on, you know, criminal justice reform, but like inside of a poop joke. And so that's kind of the main hallmarks of that kind of work.
Well, you did a TED talk about the work of the social justice comedian. Here's a clip from that talk.
Now, the American population can be broken up into three main categories. There's mostly wonderful people, haters, and Florida. Now, besides Florida, the most troubling category here are the haters, okay? They are a minority, but they overcompensate by being extra loud. They have the Napoleon complex of demographics, and yes, some of the men do wear heels. Now, as a social justice comedian, it's my goal to convert these haters because they hate a lot of things which lead to negative outcomes like racism, violence, and Ted Nugent.
So converting the haters, can you really do that with comedy? How does that work?
You know, I'm not delusional. I know that like one joke isn't going to save the world or anything like that. But I kind of view these things as like being on a continuum where, you know, there, you know, someone might be exposed to a joke here, a movie there, a TV show somewhere else. And over time, if you add that the message is going to, kind of stay with them until finally, you know, hopefully one day it changes them. Or like may helps them see something differently, because I think the thing with laughter is that, you know, it makes people feel, you know, laughter is very vulnerable, and in that vulnerability I think you're able to kind of hear a message in a way that you wouldn't if it was presented to you in a serious format or maybe in a brochure or some kind of lectury way. And so that's kind of one of the things that I think it is so effective about comedy.
And you write that for a good chunk of your life, you identified with Black or Mexican people. You were one of only two Iranian Americans in your school, and the other one had an iguana for a pet, and that's a no-go for you in making friends with someone. So what was it like to not have, you refer to it as when you're one or two of a very small racial minority, you don't have a posse. So how did you find yourself being drawn to Black and Mexican cultures?
You know, I think what happens with a lot of people who are in the kind of severely underpopulated ethnic minorities is that they sort of glom onto the other larger, more dominant minority groups. You know, so growing up for me in Southern California, that was Mexican Americans, and they had, you know, everything in our town. They had, radio stations and restaurants and issues and icons like Cesar Chavez, and really, you know, and I wanted, and it was so seductive to me, and I knew that they weren't, you know, that I wasn't Mexican, you know what I mean? I was never trying to pass. But I longed to be among them because I was like, they're not Iranian, but they're close enough, you know? And so I think that's kind of what a lot of hyphenated Americans do at certain stages of their life, because they just are looking for a thing where they belong.
And we've got another clip of you from a TED Talk again, where you were the only non-Black person in your African American Studies graduate program.
And that's when I had to reckon with my own identity, right? To really recognize that I'm, it turns out, not Mexican or Black, that I'm actually an Iranian-American Muslim female. The only problem with that was that the icons that were available to me were kind of lame.
So tell us about that last part. What were the icons that you were seeing, and what made them hard to connect with, or lame, as you put it?
Well, it's, you you know, in the aftermath of 9/11, when I was going to graduate school for African American studies, later all of my master's degree turned out to be unnecessary, as I am a comedian, but don't regret doing it. But what the kind of icons that were available to me at that time were, like, you know, dusty bearded dudes in the desert wielding weapons, who seem really sinister, and they're always like running in formation. And then the other kind of major icon of the Middle East was women who were covered in the burqa. You know, sometimes their eyes weren't even visible, and they were just, and it looks as though they're floating. They don't even have legs, you know. And so that those are the, and of course, like, if you're Iranian, there's like that one fun icon, which is, you know, the delicious uranium cake, because Iranians are always enriching uranium, which I'm doing that, you know, on the other side of the phone call right now, just enriching uranium casually. But, and so these are the things that were available to me, I think, as icons, and I just was like, I don't see myself in any of these things, you know. I I'm into, you know, cute dresses and honey mustard and African American studies, you know, so where's that icon? And so I think one of the things that I had to reckon with was that we sort of have to build a new identity, you know, in the United States, because it's been so warped by various geopolitical occurrences that have nothing to do with, you know, Muslims in America.
Well, it seems like that's what you're doing in a way. You are building new icons, and you yourself are becoming one of those icons as a director and a writer and a comedian. You directed The Muslims Are Coming, which was this hit documentary. Have you seen a difference in the kinds of role models you're creating and the way that people are thinking about you and the work that you do?
I mean, I'm not sure, you know, like, I can't say that I've seen it necessarily a difference, but I do feel like that the work is touching more people. And I get messages, you know, from like 16-year-old Filipino-American girls in Iowa. You know, I remember getting an email literally from a 16-year-old Filipino-American in Iowa, like after The Muslims Are Coming came out, who said, oh, this, you know, I really identified with your film, and I didn't realize that it would kind of speak to someone who's so different from me, but we're actually still so the same. You know, and I remember also getting a message from someone who had served in the military in Afghanistan because he hated Muslims, because he wanted to take them down. And after serving for so long and meeting Muslims, he started to kind of soften in that position. And then over time, you know, he came back to the United States and realized that he really didn't hate Muslims. and then he saw my movie that was a message that was like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I mean. They're fun, they can be hilarious and bad at bowling. And that feels like more Muslim to me than anything else. And so I have gotten messages like this from people that I find really encouraging about the work.
We're talking with Nagin Farsad, a comedian, filmmaker, writer, and actor. We're talking about her new memoir, How to Make White People Laugh. Well, the book certainly has a sense of humor, as you do, obviously, but you also don't shy away from politics and some of the darker sides of your experience. Tell us how you understood the Iranian hostage crisis as a kid living in Virginia.
Well, I mean, my parents had moved just in time for the Iran hostage crisis. And so they kind of, and they, you know, we were living in Virginia, in a quite kind of hardcore, this wasn't like a suburb of DC or anything. This was like a real part of Virginia in which they were like a really, 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 really small minority. And they were not treated very well, you know. I grew up in Southern California, you know, because I was a baby when we left there, and so I kind of, I think, had it easier because it was a lot more culturally diverse in Southern California than it was in Virginia. But I remember being in kindergarten, and a kid says to me, like, oh, you guys are communists. And in Iran, I mean, everybody hated Iran in the early 80s, and this is something we probably don't remember. And I really didn't experience it to the extent that my parents did and my brother, but people really hated Iran. It was like a big thing. And during the Iran hostage crisis, of course, you know, with Iran's actions, but they just like discriminate against Iranians in the United States. And my parents suffered the brunt of that. And that kid came to me at school one day and said, like, you're a communist. And I was like, that you mean Islamic Republic. And then that was the extent of a couple of four-year-olds could talk about. But I just remember very, you know, distinctly that, like, being Iranian was not considered a great thing.
And just briefly as we wrap up, we've got a little bit less than a minute, but we've been talking about everything we've been discussing today at a time when the presumptive Republican nominee is calling for a temporary ban on Muslim immigration. Is the landscape of the current election affecting how you see your work and how it affects people?
I mean, it just feels, it's funny because every time I think, like, you know, we're warming up to Muslims, it's going to be fine. Like, Trump says another thing, and then it's not fine again. You know what I mean? So I'm really hopeful, and I think there's been such an, you know, groundswell of support for Muslims, you know, and against this kind of rhetoric, and hopefully that'll continue because it's, you know, he said a lot of stuff about Muslims, about Mexicans, and, and those statements are, you know, they're just bigoted. So that's how it looks. That's what it looks like from here.
Nagin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Nagin Farsad. She is a comedian, actor, writer, and filmmaker based in New York City. And she talked to us about her new memoir. It's called How to Make White People Laugh.